chapter 9 is called Most Confidential Knowledge. And at the end of chapter 9, Krishna gives an instruction to Arjuna to always think of him, Manmana. And second is become my devotee, Bhava Madbhakto, Madhyaji. Yaji means worship. Yaja means worship. Madhyaji, Mam, Namaskuru, offer your obeisances unto me. So what naturally follows, logically as well as very naturally, is Krishna is going to describe various ways by which Arjuna can always think of him, Manmana. But in between, there's something very special, very, very special. The four essential verses that express the entire message of the entire Bhagavad Gita are in the earlier verses of chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita. They're called the Chatur Shloki verses. And in those verses, Krishna is describing his position. And then he describes those that understand his position, what do they do? And then he describes when they do, what he does. The relationship of love between one who loves Krishna and the object, the subject and the object, and the exchange of love. And before that, Krishna says something very commonsensical, but also very wonderful. He says to Arjuna, no one knows me. Then he explains why nobody knows me. He explains that before one exists, one cannot possibly know what exists before you exist, because it exists before you exist. And therefore people don't know me. Not the great sages, the great demigods, the greatest personalities. No one knows me unless I disclose myself to them. Then you can know. And then Krishna discloses himself to Arjuna. And he describes his position as the source of everything. And the source of everything is very important in the Vedic conception. The source of everything is the absolute truth. So those that are searching for truth, amongst them there may be someone searching for the absolute truth, and those that understand the absolute truth, those that understand the spiritual realm, that which is beyond this dual realm, very, very few understand Krishna. And then Krishna discloses himself. I'm the source of all that is material and all that is spiritual. I am the source of everything. Then he says it the other way around. Everything comes from me. And those that know this become my devotee, because he's Manmana. So how we think, when we think of Krishna, how we think of Krishna is very important. If we understand Krishna correctly, we become his devotee. Iti matva bhajante mam. He's explaining how to do what he instructed Arjuna to do. He's giving him everything to do that properly. Madhyaji mam namaskuru. And the form of that worship, or at least the essence of that worship, satatam kirtayanto mam. Always hearing and chanting and describing the glories of the Personality of Godhead is the essence of whatever worship one does, as an expression of one's love for him. And the various other forms of service that flow from that hearing and chanting about God, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, and the other processes of devotional service following the hearing and chanting about him. And the reciprocation from Krishna's side, if there's any obstacle, or even a residual tendency that exists in the heart of that individual, Krishna personally removes it. He personally intercedes on behalf of such a devotee. So Arjuna, hearing this from Krishna, is greatly amplified from the position that he's taken in the second chapter. In the second chapter, Krishna, Arjuna says to Krishna, we've been speaking like friends. Now, please take the role, instead of just my friend, take the role of spiritual master and please instruct me. And by chapter 10, Arjuna is saying, you're not just my instructor, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And constant remembrance of you is the perfection of life. Please describe for me ways by which I can always remember you, which was the instruction at the end of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna gives various ways for any one of us to understand him or to always remember him. And the way that he does this is he describes various opulences, and the Sanskrit word is vibhuti. And vibhuti is a very particular word. Vibhuti means some superlative feature of this material world that represents or is an opulence, a material opulence of the spiritual emanating source of everything. That is to say, as he said earlier, everything that is material and everything that is spiritual comes from me. So, stated conversely, you can't name something that exists separate from Krishna. Say it again, the other way. Whatever exists comes from Krishna, comes from the source of everything. I would say it the other way. There isn't something that doesn't come from that source. We'll say the same thing another way, Prabhupada's way. There are two things in creation, God and that which comes from God, and there's not a third thing. Then explicitly, there's no void in the creation of God. Now, modern scientists would disagree with that. They would say, of course there is. In space, in outer space, what is there? It's nothing. And the Vedic conception is, you're wrong, Mr. Scientist. It's one of God's energies called Akash. And within that Akash or space, there are other elements or energies of God. Bhumir, Apo, Nalo, Vayu, earth, water, fire, air, and then Akash, or Kam, space. Space isn't an existence of nothingness. Space is an energy of God in which other energies exist. And there are more subtle energies than that. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are stated in chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. All these, bina, Prakritir, Ashtada, these are my separated energies. So, in this Vibhuti Yoga chapter, there are the superlative features of things, all of which come from Krishna. So, think of something And whatever is the superlative of that something, that's a vibhuti of Krishna. Now he says, that's me. More specifically, the chapter is the opulences of the absolute. In the Sanskrit is vibhuti yoga. Vibhuti yoga. In the Bhagavatam, those of you that are familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, chapter 3, there's this one of the responses of Sutta Goswami to questions by the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages have asked Sutta to please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. To oblige them, he describes the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. Chapter 3. Starting with the Purusha avatars. The Purusha avatars means the forms of Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and the Lord of the Heart, Shirodakshay Vishnu, whose service on behalf of the original source of everything, Krishna, those forms of Vishnu take responsibility for bringing about creation as desired by Krishna. They bring it about. They maintain it and they withdraw it. They held it in a withdrawn or unmanifest state, avyakta state for some time, and then cyclically manifest, maintain, withdraw, resting, expanding, maintaining, withdrawing, resting, the cyclical feature of time. The Purusha avatars do that. And then there are avatars from the spiritual world that descend through the agency of those Purusha avatars. That's another function or service. And so then some of those, not all, are identified. Lila avatars, very commonly known in the culture of India. And the Shaktyavesha avatars and different avatars. Manvantara avatars, Guna avatars, Yuga avatars. There are different categories of forms of the Lord as they descend in this world. And after completing that list, short list, not exhaustive, Sutta Goswami says, of all of them, one is the source of them all. And Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, is the source of them all. And aside from these, there are other forms of the Lord, and he mentions, Sutta Goswami mentions vibhuti, forms of the Lord. So that's why I went through all that explanation. It fits into forms of the Lord, not in the same category as him, not Vishnu Tattva category. This is his energies. And even there's spiritual energies and there's material energies. There's spiritual opulences and there's material opulences. These are in the material opulences category. Things, objects that with these limited senses one can perceive and experience, at least some of them. Some of them are demigods, so we're too limited to experience them. But some of the things, there are things that we can experience. Of immovable things, I'm the Himalayas. Of fish, I am sharks, and so on. Things that we can perceive, those are vibhutis. And at the end, Krishna says, but what is the use of all of this? With but a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the whole universe. That's the Vishnu forms. And from the Vishnu forms, the creation comes and the vibhutis of the creation. So we may have a difficulty thinking of fixing our mind upon always the God is within you. although we may know it, it may be difficult to keep thought of God always in our mind. So this Vibhuti Yoga chapter gives an opportunity to us, by Krishna's instructing Arjuna, how to always think of Krishna. Prabhupada would sometimes say, what is the difficulty to think of Krishna? Krishna says, I am the taste of water. So who doesn't drink water? And everyone drinks water. And when you drink water, the capacity of water to quench your thirst and the natural experience of drinking water, the taste of water, pure taste of water, that's Krishna. So you can think of Krishna when you drink water. What is the difficulty? Like that, Prabhupada would say. The intelligence of the intelligence, the strength of the strong, the prowess of all powerful men. Vibhutis, opulences in this realm. We'll take the spiritual opulences. Krishna has, when Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita, it's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said. And who is Bhagavan? And Vishnu Purana Parashara Muni explains, Bhagavan is he who possesses all bhagas, or spiritual opulences. Van means one who possesses. And bhaga means spiritual opulences in fullness. Bhagavan. And Vishnu Purana, in Vishnu Purana, Parashara Muni says these opulences are all strength. But Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong. That's the vibhuti. Then there's the bhaga of Bhagavan, the spiritual opulence. And all intelligence, Krishna says, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. But he's all intelligence. Wherever there is somebody that's intelligent, always you'll find someone more intelligent and someone more intelligent and someone more intelligent. But that person who has all intelligence, there's only one such person. That's God. Bhagavan. All strength. All wealth. All beauty. All renunciation. That's God. So someone may have little opulence. He's saying in this chapter, that's me. Or, more specifically, more precisely, it's a vibhuti. It's a material opulence in the category of Krishna's material energies. So, this evening is at least cover text 33, page 479, at least if your paging system is the same as mine. Aksharanam akarosmi dvandva samakshi kasya cha aham ekakshava ekakshaya kalo dataham vishvato mukham. Of letters, I am the letter A. Amongst compound words, I am the dual compound. I am also inexhaustible time, and of creators, I am Brahma. Purport. Akara, the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet, is the beginning of all of the Vedic literature. Without Akara, nothing can be sounded. Therefore, it is the beginning of sound. In Sanskrit also, there are many compound words, of which the dual compound, like Rama Krishna, is called Dvandva. In this compound, the word Rama and Krishna have the same form, and therefore the compound is called dual. Among all kinds of killers, time is the ultimate, because time kills everything. Time is the representative of Krishna, because in due course of time, there will be a great fire, and everything will be annihilated. Among the living entities who are creators, Brahma, who has four heads, is the chief. Therefore, he is the representative of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Aham evakshaya kalo. Again, in the 11th chapter, Krishna says, Kalosmi, I am the destroyer of all things. Spend a little time speaking about time. It's 12 minutes before 8, that's what time it is. And that's the common sense of time that we have. That the moments tick by and time is passing. And that's our sense of what time is. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. It's this passage of time. But the passage of time isn't just tick tock, time is passing. Time is bringing things into being, and time is destroying things. Tick tock, tick tock. In the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, the commentator that Srila Prabhupada largely referred to, in fact dedicated the Bhagavad Gita to, was Baladev Vidyabhushan. And in Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary of Bhagavad Gita, and for that matter his commentary of many things, he says, those of you that have read the introduction, you know there's five main subject matters in the whole of Bhagavad Gita. And one of them is time. What are the other four? Ishwara, the controller or God. Living entity, Jiva. Prakriti, material nature. Karma, material activity. And time, Kala. So, of those five, one is temporary, the other are eternal. Karma is temporary. It comes and it goes. Activity comes and activity goes. It creates an action and brings about a reaction, and it's temporary. Of those five subject matters, the one that's spoken about the least is time. And yet, it's a very fascinating topic. Twice it's presented and at least mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. The time is one of the opulences, and then the universal form chapter, the next chapter, Krishna declares, time I am the destroyer of all things. But time brings things into being. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's two chapters that are, they make your head spin, because of the detail in which they speak about time. One of them is called Calculation of Time by the Atom. And it starts with the smallest unit of time and goes to eternal time. The smallest unit of time in the Vedic conception of things is the time that it takes for the sun to move across one atom. and that has a unit. And so many of those make another unit, so many of those make another unit, so many of those make another unit, and just keeps going and going and going and until it gets to two divisions of time that make up the life of Brahma, and then eternal time. But actually, back to the five main subject matters, time is eternal. But how time acts depends on the consciousness of the individual, and if the consciousness is divine consciousness, time is eternal. And then you go down and down and down and down and down to layers of creation where time is necessary to create a different sense of time, a different sense of experiencing existence, experiencing illusion. You need time to have events, and you need time and events to have illusion, or to have the full impact of illusion. For example, Einstein spoke about relative time and time-space continuum, right? I don't know what all that's about, but maybe some of you do. The Bhagavatam knows about it. The Bhagavatam speaks about the influence of time. You can't have creation without time. You can't have events without time. And creation is an event. So, Lord Vishnu, the Purusha avatar, Lord Vishnu, he introduces time by his glance. He doesn't have to go to the office and figure out how to do it. He just glances over the unmanifested totality of material energy called pradhan, and with his glance he injects time. Now from his realm, time is eternal, but depending upon the guna, the quality, and the karma, the bondage of previous activity of each living entity, they're going to experience time differently. They're going to experience life differently. They're going to be given a body that has a life cycle different according to their guna and karma, according to the conditioned consciousness that they're bearing. So, for example, some insects live for just 24 hours or a few days. And in those 24 hours or a few days, they experience everything. They experience 100 years. They are born, they grow, they produce some byproducts, they dwindle, and they die. They go through that cycle.
Some bacteria in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. And then in our human life, we experience, you know, a bigger circle. And in the heavenly planets, it's a bigger circle. And in Brahmaloka, it's a bigger circle. It's still, I'm using the word circle because it's like a Ferris wheel. Boop, 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 boop. Okay, get off. Then another, depending upon guna and karma, could be a small circle, could be a bigger circle, could be another one like this one, circle, depending upon guna and karma. The degree to which we've abided by the laws of God or violated them, that's karma, good karma, bad karma, and the qualities, the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. Depending upon those two variables, we get another ride on the Ferris wheel. Another birth, growth, producing byproducts, maintenance, dwindling, and death. Get out. Time for the next one. Measured by guna and karma. That's the Vedic picture of cyclical time. Repeatedly, Prabhupada would express, because it's in the Vedas, our 6 months of time is equal to 1 day in Swargaloka, the heavenly realm. And similarly, their 1 night is another 6 months. So our 1 year is their 1 day. And 1 moment of Brahma's life is so many cycles of yugas. One day of Brahma is 4,320,000 times 1,000 years. That's 1 day of Brahma. So it's a bigger circle, bigger cycle. And then there's beyond Lord Brahma. So time is relative, but actually time is absolute. And depending upon what your position is, or depending upon your consciousness, that will determine your position, you'll experience time differently. But actually, the good news is, time is really eternal. And we're desiring, all souls are desiring, hankering for eternal happiness. Not happiness that comes and it goes. We want, universally, we want eternal happiness that's ever increasing. And love, that's eternal. But we're searching for it in this world of created by time and destroyed by time. So even if you have something, it will be taken by time. Guaranteed. That's not a matter of, you know, whether you're a good person or not. Be a good person, it'll still be taken by time. It's invincible. There's this British saying, time and tide wait for no man. You heard that one before? The tide comes and the tide goes. Tick-tock. It doesn't wait. Oh, wait a minute, I have to do something. It doesn't wait. It's time doesn't wait. And that feature of time isn't just tick-tock. It's bringing things into being according to guna and karma. It's the direct manifestation of Krishna. It's that you read so I said there was these two chapters in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're both expressed by Maitreya to Vidura, because Vidura wants to know about these things. How does the Lord do it? How does it bring creation into being? That's a nice question. Not, does God do it? It's how does he do it? But he's not just wanting the technology of how does he do it. He wants to hear the realization of Maitreya about, because he's already learned it. Vidura's already learned it. He's Mahatma Vidura. He's a great soul. So he wants to understand the realization of how does it, and in what manner does all of this take place. So he gets both, the technology and the realization of Maitreya, and Maitreya describing this feature of time. Time is needed to bring things into being, to sustain them for some time and to destroy them. So the Lord invokes his time energy. And it's time is, in an absolute sense, time is Krishna. In a relative sense, time is a vibhuti of Krishna. It acts differently in this world, specifically according to the consciousness of the living being. There's more discussed in the third canto of Bhagavatam, but it's really amazing. You could read it again and read it again and read it 100 times and still learn something more, because it's very profound, very deep. It's part of what God does to bring creation into being. And it's being disclosed in the Bhagavatam. How does it work? How does God do it? Maitreya explains, and later on, Kapiladeva, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he also explains how he does it, how he uses the agency of time to bring about from the unmanifest state all the ingredients of creation, and then through the agency of time and his will, he produces Lord Brahma, who is also mentioned here, because once there's time and the elements that are manifest by time, there's Lord Brahma who puts all the elements together and makes a universe and takes the assistance of the Prajapatis that he generates from his own body just by willing it so, and different parts of his body, different rishis and munis are generated, and he gives them the service of creating the various species to populate the planet that he, or excuse me, the universe that he just created, not just this planet. And that's amazing description found in the third and fourth cantos of the Bhagavatam. So amongst destroyers, he's time. That's what this verse is saying. Amongst creators, he's Brahma. They're little creators. We all do a little creating. Those of you that help prepare the prasadam, there's some creating involved. And whoever built the house, there's some creating involved. And you all go to the office, and many of you go to the office and do some work, and there's some creating involved. We put on our shoes, and there's some creating involved. There's some the little creating that we all do. But that capacity to create comes from the Supreme Lord, and the superlative of the creators is the one that creates the universe. And the earlier part, the alphabet, the first letter, without the first letter you don't have the subsequent letters that follow in the Sanskrit alphabet, and without the Sanskrit alphabet you don't have sound. Without sound you don't have the Vedas. So Krishna is the first letter of the alphabet, and the compound when the words are put together, I'm that too. Of that which is the destroyers, I am the best. Of that which is creators, I am the best. The superlative. These are vibhutis. I am all devouring death. I'm going to read 34 and then we'll end. I am all devouring death, and I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. So all women should be very flattered. Krishna is appreciating you. Purport. As soon as man is born, he dies at every moment. This death is devouring every living entity at every moment, but the last stroke is called death itself. That death is Krishna. As for future development, all living entities undergo six basic changes, which I've just been mentioning. Born, grow, remain for some time, reproduce, dwindle, finally vanish. Of these changes, the first is deliverance from the womb, and that is Krishna. The first generation is the beginning of all future activities. The seven opulences listed, fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience, are considered feminine. Yay! See, Krishna is not a chauvinist after all. If a person possesses all of them or some of them, he becomes glorious. If a man is famous as a righteous man, that makes him glorious. Sanskrit is a perfect language and is therefore very glorious. If after studying one can remember a subject matter, he is gifted with good memory, or smriti, and the ability not only to read many books on different subject matters, but to understand them and apply them when necessary is intelligence, medha, another opulence. The ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness, dhriti. And when one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle, and when one is able to keep his balance both in sorrow and in the ecstasy of joy, he has the opulence called patience, kshama. So these qualities that are being presented here, that Krishna is saying is feminine, they're also identified in chapter 12 and more, where Krishna says, this is very pleasing to me. So, Prakriti, the five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, one of them being Prakriti, material nature, Prakriti is feminine. And Krishna is the energetic, the source of the energy, and that's masculine, or Purusha. Purusha and Prakriti. So these opulences, or very wonderful qualities, they're of Prakriti, they're feminine. And Krishna, the Purusha, he enjoys his energy. I'll do that again. We'll make a contrast now. We like to be enjoyers because we're part of Krishna. We also like to enjoy. But when we like to enjoy, let's say I'm thirsty, a little thirsty. So to quench my thirst, I need something outside of myself. There's some nice fresh water. Now my thirst is quenched. Now what else would I like? I'd like some friendship. So I need a friend. Will you be my friend? Very good. So now there's something outside of myself and something I feel I want and I need. Something outside of myself is helping me to fulfill that something that I need. And it's cold out, so I get my coat when I leave the house because it's winter setting in. So I need something for my happiness. That's me, or us. And then there's Krishna. He doesn't need anything. Because everything that exists, it's his energy. So that's something outside of himself. He desires companionship and bhavati, or voila, there it is. His own pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani, is there. His eternal counterpart. Radharani is actually not different than him. We discussed this yesterday evening at a home program where there was installing Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Radharani is described as a second feature. There's Krishna and there's Radha, and they're in two forms. But actually, one entity, I'll say it again, one entity manifest in two forms. Just like there's the sun and there's the sunshine. It's one entity. Have you ever found sunshine somewhere without a sun? Have you ever found a sun somewhere without sunshine? It's one entity. Energetic and energy. Energy and energetic. One entity. Krishna is the energetic and Radha is the energy. It's specifically the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency or pleasure energy of Krishna. She is not different than Krishna. She is Krishna's pleasure potency. We're tiny. They'll go back to us again. We're very tiny because we're part of the Supreme, and the Supreme has the potential has the position of the supreme enjoyer. We have the tendency also to want to enjoy. But for my enjoyment, I need something outside of myself because I'm very tiny. Krishna doesn't. So all these opulences, they're Prakriti. And these seven that are mentioned, fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, patience. These are feminine qualities. Krishna may decorate one of the living entities with these features, or more than one of these features, or all of these features. And in the 12th chapter we find what Krishna says is, such persons are very dear to me. But Krishna decorates, listen to this part, it's very important, it's also very nice. Krishna decorates the living entities with these qualities when they show one primary quality. And then he decorates with the secondary qualities. The primary quality is Krishna Eka Sharananda. They have shelter in Krishna alone. And Krishna sees that quality, and Krishna is very pleased. So then he decorates at his own discretion, in his own way, and so forth, in his own timing. He decorates a devotee with this nice quality and that nice quality and this other nice quality. So when they come before him, Krishna smiles. Oh, this is very nice. Krishna is enjoying. He is the best of enjoyers. And he especially decorates those who are dear to him from their love for him. And so he decorates them. So if we want to develop these nice qualities, and or any one of them, become a devotee of Krishna. And if Krishna so desires, he'll decorate you with nice qualities. Some persons, they have some capacity for memory, but they may not be a nice devotee. But somewhere, there's some opulence you can know that in the background, somewhere back there, there's some piety. And therefore, they've been endowed with some opulence. Now, with that opulence, they can use it nicely, wisely, or they can misuse it. Supposing at the end of the program, we have a nice announcement to make. Everyone that has come to this program this evening will get $1 million. We have a little, along with a samosa, we have a little bag that has $1 million, and it's yours. Now, what will each of us do with those $1 million? It depends upon our heart. And some opulence is given to someone depends on what your condition of heart, how you use that something. Those that have a disposition towards God, they want to use that in God's service. Prabhupada describes when he was young, it was just a known thing that persons who somehow, didn't matter what their religion was, if they became successful in business, they would use the fruit of that success in their business in glorification of God. So Prabhupada describes, he was a chemist, or had some pharmaceuticals, something like that, as his grihastha business. And one of the persons that he interacted with was a Muslim man who made jars or containers for medicines. And Prabhupada was one of his customers. He sold him jars. In the course of time, something like that. In the course of time, the man became wealthy. And Prabhupada asked him, what do you intend to do with your wealth? He said, I'm going to make a mosque. And Prabhupada thought, this is very good. Someone prospers and then they use that in service to God. And then Prabhupada explained, now that's changed. The prosperity is because of some piety, but then people, the tendency is not to use that to glorify God, but so many other things. You won't name those so many other things. You all know better than I do what's going on out there in how people use their wealth. Some still have, without detailing, some still have some sense of using wealth for some betterment. But the real betterment is that which will not solve a problem on a temporary basis, but make the permanent solution to all problems. That's the best service you can do for others. And what's that? What's that? Where someone no longer has a problem. And that is when they return to the spiritual world, where there's no more birth and death. There's no more bodies to have problems with. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, doshanu, darshanam. A feature of knowledge, when Krishna is describing to Arjuna, what is knowledge? This is one of them. The real problems are life, even if you have good health, and you're never hungry, and everybody around you is nice. That's never going to happen. But so imagine that could happen. It still doesn't solve your problems, because birth, death, disease, and old age. How do you solve those problems? By going back to Godhead, where there's no more bodies, material bodies. There's spiritual form, spiritual activity, spiritual love, spiritual kinship, satisfaction on a social level, social satisfaction on an emotional level, satisfaction on all levels that are important, but there's no material body because there's no need for a material body except for having separate desires from God. So just that which brings one desire in harmony with God, no more material body is required. No more problems. No more taxes. No more disease. No more hospitals. No more hunger. No more material bodies. Is it real? It's real. It's the gift of God. It's what He wishes to give. Eternal life in the spiritual world with Him. He's giving the means. So, that's the best way to use opulences, to see opulences where they've come from, and then to use them in relation to the source where they've come from. Not that the source needs something, because He's the source of all opulences. But we need, for our proper direction of consciousness. Okay, so I'll stop with that. See if there's any comments or questions. Yes?
I have a question. This is a minimal business.
Hare Krishna.
So you're saying that if we don't have a material body, that we go into like yes, the spiritual realm, we will all have four arms?
No. Like not necessarily. Depends on your position. One thing for sure is birth with it. Our present situation is there's a soul that's covered by a body. And the body takes birth, and the body dwindles and dies. So what's for sure is that's not going to be the case. There's a spiritual form that isn't born and doesn't die. And what that form is depends upon what our eternal relation with Krishna is. There's all variety in the spiritual world. Besides form that looks like ours, there's trees and birds and fish and all varieties of existence in the spiritual world. So someone may be a cow. That's not four arms. It's four legs. But depending upon one's natural quality of love, wishing to serve God in pure spiritual existence, that spiritual form will be manifest, not be given to the soul, but is of the soul, will manifest.
Thank you.
Yeah. So don't worry what that form is. Whatever that form is, that's your eternal form. And it's nice. Something?
Yes, Maharaj. Are you able to share that how important is serving the devotees in the process of...
If you want me to, I can.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I'm trying to understand in terms of like, how do we put that into practice, serving the devotees? If you can share some tips, that would be good.
How would you like to connect that to the subject that we're discussing today?
Yeah, in the sense that there is something about here in this shloka, you know. Yeah, it says about like subject matters, to understand them and apply them with intelligence. So when we read several places in Bhagavad Gita, it talks, Prabhupada especially talks about serving the devotees. So I'm just trying to understand that as a neophyte devotee, what is the best way to put that into practice?
Well, I think your question is tangential to the subject matter. It's a nice question. But one of the best ways to connect this subject with your question, the application is to always remember Krishna. Because that's the reason why Krishna is presenting what he's presenting, is because Arjuna, his devotee, wants to know how to always remember Krishna. So when we're serving the devotees, because they remind us of Krishna, one of the most important things is that as you're serving the devotee, you can think how this is pleasing to Krishna. One of the presentations that I've prepared specifically for colleges is about relationships and what the nature of a relationship is, specific to Rupa Goswami's teachings, and then contrasting pure and impure relationships. So pure relationship has to do with where you understand who the other person is and who you are. Because you have a misunderstanding of who the other person is, it's not going to be a very happy exchange. And if you do understand the other person, especially on a spiritual plane, however their psychophysical makeup may be, if you understand their identity on a spiritual plane and are mindful of their identity on a spiritual plane, then you can have a pure relationship. But there's another ingredient, and that is the position of God as the ultimate enjoyer or object of our life, of each of us, and then we have a relationship with another person who is a devotee, and we're serving that other devotee, but the connection between yourself and the other devotee is the relationship with God. Forget that, and it's very easy to get involved in some other kind of relationship that's not wholesome. Not elevating, it's not satisfying to us, and it's not satisfying to God, because we forget who it is that we're meant to serve. We're meant to serve, assist one another in serving God, and assist one another in our relationship with God. Say it the other way, from God's perspective. Those who are dear to Krishna, there are many places where it's indicated that Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas are very dear to Krishna. Because they're very dear to Krishna, it will help us in our efforts to please Krishna to serve them very nicely. It's saying the same thing the other way. From Krishna's perspective, you do that, you please Krishna. And minus that, how is it pleasing to Krishna? Prabhupada gave the example of from his experience of going for walks in New York City or other big cities. And early in the morning, big people that you can't get a chance to see if you go to their office because they're big people and they're too busy, they're out in the park in the morning. And they're out in the park walking their dog. So you may have difficulty making an appointment to meet that big person, but if you see him walking his dog in the park in the morning, and you appreciate, oh, such a nice dog, and scratch the dog's chin and pat him on the head, and you immediately made friendship with the big man. Love me, love my dog. Similarly, you make nice relation with and serve nicely those who are dear to Krishna, you've pleased Krishna. And you go ask Krishna, what can you do what can I do to please you? Please my devotee. Serve my devotee. Serve the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. So we do that because it's pleasing to Krishna. And whatever may be some difficulty in our heart to do that, that's our problem and that's what we have to work on so that we can be pleasing to Krishna. It will bring us to that position where as being pleasing to Krishna, Krishna will decorate us with nice qualities. If he so desires.
Based on the desires, the spiritual identity takes different bodies in the material platform.
Based upon guna and karma.
Yeah, so the same spiritual entity is covered by different bodies based on the desires.
Based on guna and karma.
Then is the same time?
Because I could desire. I had this experience in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. We were at a Westheimer fair. It's an art fair, and the people that go around are all drunk and wild, and so we had the big changing bodies diorama, and the two drunk guys came up and said, you know, what's that? And I told them, and he said, oh, okay, whatever I desire. I didn't say what I said, whatever I desire, I can. And they just started describing in explicit language what they desired, and I won't tell you what they desired. But, you know, you can desire something, it doesn't mean that's what's going to happen.
The question is there same kind of transition possible in the spiritual platform?
No.
So like, say, extending his questions, like, say, if someone is having a form of cow and he wants to serve in the same mood to Krishna, so is there any other time, like, he can take another form to serve in a different way?
The good news is, spiritual desires aren't like that. The good news is that from the spiritual platform, the whole program of the grass is greener on the other side, Jayawana would like to be one of those, a cowherd boy instead of a cow, it doesn't go on. The desire of the soul is completely natural. And one's happiness is complete, one doesn't desire anything else. Let me ask you this. Ask Hanuman, would you like to be anything other than a monkey that you are? Would you like to be, you know, Lakshman's brother. He's happy being what he is. He's Hanuman. He's happy serving Ram from that position. Invite him to take some other position. No. So, the question you're raising is what Bhaktisiddhanta calls working hypothesis. Supposing something, then what? And my answer is, there's no supposing something. One is fully set. One's spiritual desire is one's spiritual desire. It's not, I want one of those and some of those and not going shopping in a Kmart. It's of the soul.
Doesn't it seem like even in this world we change our ego depending on certain situations that
the
world puts us in.
You bet.
So
ever changing.
I think he might be saying like, you know.
Yeah, and I'm responding by saying it's not like that. The spiritual plane is not like the material plane.
Ah. But can we be, say, I wanted to be a like.
But it's not like that.
Four arms.
Maybe. If that's what your eternal form is, that's what will happen. If that's not what your eternal form is, that's not what's going to happen just because you want one. But don't worry about it because, you know, don't go for a ride on the chariot of the mind, because it's not like that. It's not by speculation. I want one of those. It's of the soul. It will come in a very natural way.
Sure, I see that.
Whatever that is, it will come in a natural way, and you will be fully satisfied.
Sure.
You won't think, oh, it's nice over here, but maybe if I had one of those.
It might take two lifetimes.
Okay. Well, chant nicely, and it may take one and a half, maybe. Something else?
Your Holiness, in the Bible, when we discuss about knowledge, and we discuss about God being eternal, we think of, like, for instance, we say that one day to us is as 1,000 years to God. And in the same way Krishna is God and Krishna is eternal. And I like what you just mentioned about the monkey and the monkey being happy where he is, or where she is. And I think that's something that we as people of God need to be happy where we are. No matter what it is, no matter what we're doing. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, we're on the same page with that one. Yeah. The material, contented with the arrangements that God has made for me to serve Him, but and the aspiration at the same time is an aspiration of love. Let this service that I'm doing for you be pleasing to you. Let that intimacy of love be ever increasing. So what I mean to say in response to your question is, say yes to God for the circumstances that you have placed me in, and that it's just an opportunity to serve you. And at the same time, I aspire for something, that intimacy of love, the closeness of feeling that you are satisfied by the service that I'm rendering to you. May that intimacy of love ever increasing. You know, some tension in that regard is good. It's not toxic. It's good. It's an important spiritual principle in our Vaishnava teachings. Now, I wish my circumstance would change. I'm content with my circumstance. This is Lord Brahma's prayer. I've made, after he's taken the cows and the cowherd boys and put them in the cave, and he comes back and he sees there's the calves and the cowherd boys. So he goes back to the cave and they're in the cave. And he comes back and he sees they're with Krishna. And then all of a sudden they transform into forearm forms of Vishnu, surrounded by each one of them, surrounded by all the personified Vedas and the great demigods glorifying in a great grand crescendo of song and praise. And then all of a sudden they all disappear. And all he sees is Krishna standing in front of him with a lump of yogurt and fruit in his hand, looking at him. So he realized that was not the calves and the cowherd boys, that was the expansions of Krishna. And those in the cave, that was also Krishna's dear devotees. So, uh-oh, I've made a big boo-boo. I've offended Krishna. And then he offers prayers, and one of those prayers is, for this offense, I accept the responsibility that I carry for that mistake, but one request, one prayer that I have is that my mind not deviate one moment from you. That my desire is simply to be in your service always. So, accepting our condition and being content with whatever it is due to our past activity, good, bad, mixed, and now I'm in this circumstance by God's arrangement, let me say yes to that arrangement, and internally, let me aspire for, that was the word I was looking for, let me aspire for that position of your eternal service where you're pleased by that service. Ever increasingly pleased by that service. Although you're fully satisfied, let it be offered with that kind of love. That's my hankering, my aspiration. Not change of circumstance. Sometimes circumstance, to serve Krishna favorably, some circumstance may need to be adjusted, but it's not a, you know, it's not a life and death thing. It's to enhance my position of serving you, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire. You got something? Okay, let's hear it.
So, like, it's about what you said about Krishna is the source of everything.
Yeah.
So, when you're saying everything, you're referring to, like, creatures, beings?
Spirit and matter. Everything spiritual and everything material. So, creatures included, sure.
So, what about demons?
What about demons? Krishna is the source of everything. Because some people want to be like that. He gives them the facility. Do you ever do any mischief in the house? Never. At least not when anybody's watching. And so, why? Why don't your mother and father say, no mischief or you go out of existence? That's not a choice. So there's a choice. You can behave nicely and you can behave otherwise. And those who choose not just otherwise but diabolically in opposition to, because that's a free will choice that's facilitated. God doesn't want persons to be like that. He's advocating something else, but some persons insist, no. There's some kids I know, that's their favorite word. No. It's really funny. The parents can say anything, and the answer is no. They say it with gusto, utsahan, no! Really? Anyway, so why? Why would God create such a situation where children can say, no! Like that. They have free will. Is that all right? Okay. Okay, I think we're done. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
My name is Prabhupada Swami ki
jai.